they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get we found. Ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
Hey, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are, whatever you're doing. This is Raf riding solo for the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast this morning. And it is morning, and boy, howdy, is it. This is an early one. I complained when I couldn't travel during the pandemic times. Didn't want to get back to traveling as much as I did in the before times. But now sort of getting back on the road and realizing how terrible I am at calendar math and time zone math, because I managed to schedule this one at when I was at my desk at 9 a.m. Eastern, except now I'm at 7 a.m. because I'm on mountain time and it's early. And so I apologize for the video quality, but look, folks, it's dark. So coming to you from beautiful Salt Lake City here, I've got Mark Simos from Microsoft. Mark, how are you? Thanks for coming back.
Nice to be here, man. This is fun.
And in a warmer and brighter place you are.
Yes, warm it is.
All right there, Yoda. Oh man. So as I was thinking about this show and frameworks and kind of how we're going to talk through this and how we're going to structure this discussion, I got up and I kind of stared out the window while it was still dark and watched one of the there's a building going up about a block and a half away. And I watched the guy or gal, I guess the person, ascending the crane, which is, you know, one of those big tall things that moves around and pulls heavy things on top of the buildings. And I'm thinking to myself, man, that person has to have a metric crap ton of trust in that architecture, in that blueprint, in that plan. And I'm like, huh, that's a good metaphor for what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of trust. You just got to actually validate it, you know, not just assume it's there.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure what they're going to be doing, be able to validate as he climbs that. But man, I tell you, it's kind of interesting to watch some of that go up. So look, I've had folks talking about Azure quite a bit on this podcast. We've done it from the when you guys launched Sphere, I think it was called, is called.
Yeah,
that's the IoT thing.
IoT offering. Yep.
Yep. That was kind of cool. Did that live from RSA. We've talked about the massive malware zoos with like three different people from your org going all the way back to Sergio. So good times there. And I I've been spending a ton of time in Azure lately, mainly because a lot of the customer base that I have in my day job is in there. And so, folks, this conversation came about from the fact that I text Mark regularly asking random questions. And it's a shock that he still replies. But, but you know, Teams now reaches across organizations.
For better or worse.
For better or worse, correct. So had lots of questions and have been reading on the how to do Azure right from a structural, technical, operational, security perspective, and thought we'd talk through their CAF Cloud Adoption Framework and another piece of it whose acronym I've already forgotten.
Cyber Reference Architecture, MCRA.
Yes, that. Yeah, that. I'm just going to blame it on the fact that it's too early. That's all. Just fill in the blanks, Mark, when my brain stops functioning. Oh, man. Yes. Then the reference architecture. So let's start with the cloud adoption framework. Give me a sense of as people buy into, jump into Azure, what that's meant to do and sort of how it's structured to get people going.
Yeah, and the two things to kind of keep in mind, you know, for a security professional, practitioner, leader, is there's two parts of the CAF that are interesting. One is the overall CAF, which is literally cloud adoption framework. How do I adopt the cloud? How do I think about cost and efficiency and, you know, all these other things and availability and like the full range of all the different disciplines that are in there. And then so there's
that's a big general picture, right?
Yep. And then there's the specific secure methodology, which launched,
right,
I think it's going on 8 or 10 months ago now, roughly. And that is really focused on the security program. And so it's part of the Azure CAF, I think is the official branding of it. But we really didn't restrict ourselves to just, you know, Azure. It's really just how do you do security right, and sort of serves as a reference of how do you do your security program in this new era we're in, which is multi-cloud and on-prem and SaaS and containers and all the DevOps and craziness and Power Apps and, you know, low code and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it's interesting. From a personal perspective, I find it interesting that when I hear Microsoft people talk about cloud compute, they always talk about multi-cloud, as in like not being denialist about the fact that companies tend to use more than one. So I find that refreshing, and I wanted to point that out because, you know, while a vast majority of my customer base and the people I work with every day are in Azure, is it Azure or Azure? I've used both, and now I don't really know.
I think they're both right. I go by Azure. I just like it, but I've heard plenty of people
like the color, right?
In different countries call it Azure, and I'm like, okay.
It's like the color, Azure. It's a color, yeah. It's like that beautiful blue. Yeah, so it's interesting. I've looked through it, and it does cover a ton of the I feel like it's really right for people that have been living in the on-premise physical world, or maybe even a virtual on-premise world, right, where we've been doing cloud-ish stuff like virtual machines and different methods. I mean, some of us have been doing virtual machines and containers going back to Solaris, but let's go ahead and bypass that piece. It gives you sort of a sense of what do you need to be thinking about step by step by step. And it's not specific. It's not saying click this button, select this feature. It really does speak to the heart of, listen, if you're going to be putting stuff into the public cloud, here's what you need to be thinking about. And I appreciate the fact that you guys have called out cost as one of the things, because it does strike me that people tend to go, well, you know, it's going to be cheaper in the cloud. It'll be faster. It'll be better. I just need to put it up there and it'll be great.
Yeah. Not I mean, so good. It's definitely not a magic wand on any front, right? It's a different model, a different way of operating. And, you know, sometimes you do get some cost efficiencies in the cloud, but the thing that we found is actually the most valuable when you look at it from sort of a business leader perspective, because we really try to think in, you know, different layers, business leader, CIO, CISO, technical leader, you know, directors and practitioners. But when you look at it from a business leader, oftentimes it's really about agility. Like if I need to enter a new market or I need to get compliant with something really quickly, I need to be able to do that quick so I don't miss the market. And I'm not waiting 6 to 12 months for my IT and security teams to do their rigmarole reconcile thing. And so we actually find that, yeah, cost is important because you want to manage and maintain and keep the cost down. But the interesting thing for me was that it wasn't that it's like, hey, this is cheaper and we're trying to save X percentage. It's about I need to get my stuff done quick and I need to be able to do this business move, and I can't do it without the tech to back it up. And so that's the thing that's always been sort of fascinating to me, is like it's kind of a mix of those two things.
Yeah, and the like the Azure specific, if you go to docs.microsoft.com/en-us-azure-cloud-adoption-framework, that's the doc I've been staring at. It's nicely organized into this 3x3, and it's very kind of progresses you through it. Get started, strategy, plan, ready, migrate, innovate, govern, manage, and organize. And it's got components of, how to build business value under the innovate, how to govern methodologies, benchmarks, and management, and all the other like. Ready is further down. Like it's like, I feel like it's like the fourth piece to this, and it's, I feel like it's really well done. Like having gone through it for the first time as trying to put it through like fresh eyes, like, okay, if I was going to be doing this, you know, would this be helpful? And it does walk you through a lot of the fundamentals. But Mark, what if I'm a person that's saying, great, but I kind of want a checklist. I want a list of things that I should specifically be thinking about. I should be thinking about how I structure my security groups, how I structure my account subscriptions, and where I place, you know, different types of workloads. Where do we reference that, or what's the strategy for that?
So there's really two different things that we have for that. Hey, just give me a prescriptive thing. And one is sort of a reference design and associated automation. That's part of the CAF. It's called our Enterprise Scale Landing Zone. We might have changed the name of it and just call it Landing Zone now, but if you look for that, you'll find it. And that's like an architecture that has all the security, all the cost, all the efficiency, all the scalability, all those kind of things built in. And then the associated, you know, PowerShell, ARM templates, et cetera, to sort of make that real and set that up quickly. And it really, you know, the landing zone idea is sort of, hey, we want to have this nice, secure, well-operated place to land our stuff as we migrate in. So that was sort of the origin for it. But it can also serve as like a migration point from cloud to cloud as you realize, uh-oh, we created kind of a mess. We now need to consolidate it. Because there's a lot of ready, fire, aim in the cloud. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that the CAF was, you know, accommodating both the, hey, we got into this and now we need to back into this and have a big picture strategy, as well as actually starting there like you should have in the first place. Because people are going to start whichever way they start, and we want to make sure they're good with each of those. But the landing zone there is how we sort of say, here's your reference design, baked, ready to drop stuff in. Now, the other piece for sort of the more checklist-oriented folks is more of the Azure Security Benchmarks. And we've got a separate episode to talk about
that. Yeah, we're going to do a separate episode just on that. That's going to be great.
Yeah, and that's where that maps into all the different frameworks and all the different pieces, et cetera. We use them internally at Microsoft. And so that's really much more of a checklist standard thing as opposed to here's a reference design, which is the landing zone.
So the landing zone concept is super cool because you mentioned that a lot of organizations tend to do the ready, fire, aim. I think a lot of my experience has been fire, aim, ready. Well, so there's this is how it usually works, right? There's a very specific project that somebody says, hey, we should do this in the cloud. They go, yes, that's a perfect candidate for just doing this in the cloud. And if you're not watching the video, I'm doing air quotes, doing this in the cloud. It's kind of like, you know, in security when people say we really should do something. They go, yes, we should do something. And then somebody just names something and we all go do it. But the tendency is to, maybe it's like that legacy thinking where we assume that we can fix it later. Like, oh, we can just install it. We can put it in there. And then we'll build security around it later. You can, but it's way more difficult to do the build security later if you've gone cloud native. First, do you agree? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, I always look at things through the lens, like whatever we're doing in tech and security is pretty much a reflection of how humans have done stuff in the past, right? Like period, like just, you know, building buildings and cities and everything like that. It's the same. And so we're going to follow the same mental pathways. And there's always this natural tension between, I just want to get stuff done. I just want something simple. I want it fast, which is what everybody wants, right? And sometimes you can get away with that. Sometimes that's the right thing because it's a waste to do this huge, big thinking, planning, waterfall thing, right? But sometimes you actually have to do that. And a cloud migration is one of those things where it pays to spend that time doing the upfront investment and really understand it, set up the program and the structure and all those kind of things right. Does that mean that people are going to realize that right up front for their first project? Usually not. So, you know, we definitely see that kind of mix of things. And, you know, and the whole point of the CAF, like I said, in the CAF Secure as well, is to catch people no matter where they are and then show them the path on how to get to the right place without wasting a lot of effort.
So if they've already, so let's take the instance, because I know there's a lot of companies that are, and this may surprise some of you. It surprised me the first 27 times I heard it. Not anymore, though. There still are a lot of companies that are like, yeah, we should think about this cloud thing. I guess it's not unheard of that technology adoption happens slowly. But when it happens, it tends to, especially in down market, right? Once somebody says, "Hey, this is viable," suddenly, why are we doing this the old way? Everything moves, and the dam complete. Like you go from it's like a Looney Tunes scene where you've got like the dam springs. That dam's been fine. It springs a tiny leak, and the coyote goes to put his finger in it. And 3 seconds later, there's 50 leaks, and then the dam's gone, and the coyote's washed away seven states downstream. But I've seen this where some small piece gets built out and moved up into Azure, and at some point later, somebody comes in and goes, "Hey, we should look at security on this because we're pretty sure it's okay." Right. Somebody calls and says, "Hey, should we have a consultant come in and tell us, what we should be doing? Did we do this right?" And I feel like that CAF, especially the technically oriented components, which I very much like you to talk about, like how does that facilitate the did we do it right? As opposed to, because if you're just starting out, you pull up in the CAF, you go, "All right, here's my step by step. Here's the things I need to be thinking about, big picture." If it's already out there and somebody goes, "So did we do it right? Did we screw this up? Show me something that says we thought of," and beyond security even, right? If you think about it from an operational perspective, like are the ops pieces, have they been implemented correct? Are we implementing, the right kind of logging? Is the subscription structure properly done? Do we have the right roles and the kind of features implemented? Account structure within the role-based access world, because that is the least, by the way, least simple part of any cloud is the roles and permissions and that makes.
There's a reason why we just bought Cloud Knox because our customers need it bad.
Man, it is that piece of. Look, if you screw up identity, you screw up more than just identity. Like the entire thing gets broken. Yeah. So people default to too much, but there's a lot you can do in a lot of different ways with groups and permissions and such. So I want to come back to that in a second, but more to the point of if I'm sitting, being tasked with this internally, right, as an employee, and somebody says, "Okay, did we do, it's your job to make sure that our cloud migration is going well. Is it going well? Can you show me what's the checklist of things that we should have done?" Is that something I can look to the CAF to as well?
So yes, we were actually the secure methodology is a little farther behind the other ones because it's a little bit newer in terms of getting content complete across all of it. But one of the things that is used throughout the CAF is I think they're called checklists now. I can't remember. We have them both for the CAF level, if I recall correctly, and then the well-architected level, which is more per workload. So CAF is like your whole migration, your whole going to the cloud. And all the attributes of that, security, et cetera. And then there's the well-architected framework is more of a per workload basis. And there is checklists and automation and all those kind of things throughout those. I don't know if there's like a single tool that will report on all of that in one place in the CAF. I haven't studied that yet, but I do know in the security space, we do have that. So what used to be known as Azure Security Center just got renamed to Defender for Cloud because it covers...
I love that you guys just decided to rename things.
I had to do a lot of changes to the cyber reference architecture because some of the words were longer. So Defender for Cloud, formerly Azure Security Center, does provide all that reporting. It's actually a free included with Azure kind of thing. All that kind of stuff for Azure. And it also has been extended to AWS, GCP, and I think on-prem resources, as well as any other third-party clouds now. So we can provide a lot of that, not just in your cloud and how are you doing on Azure, but also how are you doing across your entire infrastructure estate. So that's one of the cooler developments in the last year or so. I think they've added those capabilities in.
So, I mean, something I've got a page bookmark in here that I talk to a lot within the Ready section under Organize Your Azure Resources Effectively. There's a thing that talks about how to create organizational units, right? From the management group down to the subscription to the resource group and then individual resources, how to bucket things and segment them off by function and to create both resiliency and ultimately some security in there as well. But it's nice that it's kind of laid out nice and easy in this. But it's not, I want to stress that, you know, from my experience especially, it's not a list of check this, check this, check this, check this, check this. It's much more involved. So it really is, it does speak to the builder more than the, like, did we do it right? You know, are we missing things?
Kind of governance and audit.
Is that something? Yeah. Is that something you? What's that?
Oh, you mean like the governance and audit type of thing?
Yeah. Because I mean, look, I ultimately think there's going to be all the organizations that sort of fire aim ready tend to have a reckoning at some point, and somebody says, "Hey, wait a second, you know, there's no standards here, right? How is it that this department does it different than this department?" And then this department is even more different. And I didn't even know we were doing
this. That's actually why we have a govern section in the cloud adoption framework. And one of my favorite sections that I think is in all of them, I haven't checked all of them, but the govern one, they have an anti-pattern section, which is here's the things that people usually do wrong and what you should be doing instead of that. So that's one of the favorite things, and I can't wait to get digging in to start writing the security version of that part of the schema, because there is a lot of anti-patterns in security. The thing I really like about the CAF is it's built from real world experience. I mean, customers, anyone can contribute to Microsoft Docs, but it's mostly contributed to by our actual CSA community that is helping our customers migrate all the time. When we run into something that's not documented, boom, add it there. And so it's really meant to have that complete framework and then, you know, obviously clean up and streamline it over time.
And so as you're talking, I clicked over to it. So the top two govern anti-patterns. The first one, misunderstood shared responsibilities. Oh my. Yes. And also yes. Also the next one, assume out-of-the-box solutions provide security. Now, there's a caveat to that, I think, that we should throw in there. And that out-of-the-box solutions attempt to provide security, but you can't effectively secure something that truly secure. You can provide security components, right? The customers simply have to turn on, but that doesn't security make, as Yoda once said.
It's the necessary but not sufficient. The you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. You know, it's that kind of thing.
All that. Like,
yeah, someone's actually got to do something about the information we're telling you about.
Well, yeah, and I've heard so many times. Well, I have logging turned on. Like, okay, and like, well, but shouldn't it be telling me when bad things happen? Like, only if you look at it.
Collection is not detection, y'all.
So there's a lot of bits to that. I'm glad the anti-pattern section is cool there that you have there. That's a kind of that lessons learned and collective list of things that I guess. We're all probably guilty of at some point, right? Of kind of messing up on. So what's you mentioned there's a technical component to that too, kind of a subsection that addresses not the general cloud reference framework and adoption in the CAF, but goes into like the technical components of it, right?
Yeah, the way we think about it, it's kind of broken down in a couple different ways. So CAF, Cloud Adoption Framework, is the overall per enterprise, all the things you do there, including the technicals, like here's the big landing zone you're going to be putting a bunch of stuff in. A bunch of different workloads is our term for it at Microsoft. And then the well-architected framework, sometimes called WAF, not to be confused with the Web App Firewall. Sorry. kind of blame AWS for that one. But the well-architected is really focused on a per-workload basis. So there's a difference that we found of, hey, I need to set up an identity and a secure identity and blah, 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 versus I as an app owner need to actually use that identity and consume that for my employees, for my business to consumer, my B2C customer accounts and partner accounts and all that. And so we found that there's this difference at those levels, and then each of them has a technical component. and sort of a process governance, you know, strategy component as well. And so the well-architected framework is very much a complement to CAF and plugs in at that per workload basis, whereas CAF is, you know, the overall, this is the big project managed by the enterprise that's workload agnostic.
So I'm going to, maybe this goes into the anti-pattern section or something similar, but you guys in the world, the blue world that is Microsoft, use workload specifically, and it's slightly different than I hear the AWS folks talk about. Define what workload means.
So workload is at least my interpretation of it, right? Because I live in security land, right?
Right.
But my interpretation of it is when you say application, because of the way application architectures are being broken and combined and mashed up and all sorts of different things, it's very difficult to say an application is the unit of thing that you would migrate to the cloud, that you would then connect to something else, et cetera. So workload tends to be a little bit more, the way I've seen it used, a little bit more of a fuzzy definition that, you know, basically says this is something that provides value to the organization, to the business. And it might be one app, it might be multiple apps, it might be a, you know, a bunch of things together, including a database. There's different ways of doing it, but that's sort of the thing you would move on-prem to the cloud at any given moment. That's how I see it used most often.
Okay. Because I've heard workload referred to as particularly like a VM or a container specifically, like that thing, that unit of thing that does work, workload, you know.
I think of it as a little more of like a macro sort of superset of the apps, because it's, you just can't say what is an app nowadays. You know, good luck defining that.
It's a conglomeration of microservices and data and functions.
Legacy and bits that you can't decompile and all that stuff. Yeah.
it's a lot. It's a lot of. I wouldn't have said this back then, but I sort of long for the days when we said, "Hey, an application. It's this web server, this app server, and then this backend database server, and I can put security controls in between them, and everything's great." That's broken now.
And so, yeah, just to finish up on the secure methodology. Ultimately, the way we approached this was, you know, we took obviously very much a zero trust philosophy in a way of thinking of things, because that's sort of infused through everything Microsoft. But ultimately, we looked at, okay, what does a modern security program look like? Because most of them were organic and hobbled together over time. And so what are the disciplines here? And, you know, it was pretty standard stuff in many cases, like asset protection, which is usually kind of figured out strategy governance by security, often implemented by IT. The DevSecOps, you know, how do you secure innovation? And we actually did innovation security on purpose so we could have kind of low-code power apps kind of things along with DevSecOps and have a concept over the top of both of them, because it's professional developers, citizen developers. And we actually stole some of these categories from we contributed to and built these, you know, blocks with the open group, and then, you know, essentially aligned our cloud adoption framework to them. But the one that's probably the most contentious, but it's an inevitable, is we see access control as one thing. It's not network. It's not identity. It's both of them together working to govern access. And because these teams are usually like oil and water, even within the security group, it's or security and IT, like we know that's going to be one of the most contentious and difficult ones to blend. I mean, we're starting to see some ZTNA and SASE technology that's starting to blend these two together and bring them together. But that's the one that we know is going to be the hardest to implement. Most of the rest of it is kind of recognizing what's emerging and what's been done for a long time, like governance and whatnot.
Yeah, zero trust is interesting because it's such an interesting philosophy that's so simple to talk about, but so difficult in true actual practice, because it isn't just a network layer. It's not about access at the network. It's not about authentication, authorization only. It's not about applications. It's not about systems. It's basically all of that. How do you break it down as far as you can into autonomous units? And, you know, you and I have been in IT long enough and security long enough to know that back when applications were relatively simple, and I asked for data flow and network diagrams and reference architectures for applications so that we could put appropriate security controls around them, people stared at me. Now explode that into microservices and multi-cloud solutions and data this and Cosmo and this and SQL Server all sorts of and manner of processing and storage and customer data and all that. Who knows where things go anymore? It's just, and it's even worse, I feel, because at least you could have an autonomous group of developers back in my day that were, you could say, okay, guys, you built this. What the hell does it do? And now it's, okay, you built this one piece. What is it supposed to do and what does it connect to? And you go, okay, that thing. And it's supposed to take this piece of data, do this with it, and send it over there. I'm like, great. Who are those other two groups?
Yeah.
And I have to go hunt and peck and find them.
In some ways, I kind of look at Zero Trust as finally dealing with a problem that we put off and deferred. Like in the old days, this problem existed, but we deferred it by saying, oh, it's a trusted internal network. And that worked, air quotes, for a little while until it didn't. And then phishing got really reliable. And then stuff started appearing outside of the network. And all of a sudden, that assumption that we had used to put off this harder work of dealing with the apps and everything like that and the data all came into us. And then you throw on the complexity of the, okay, now we're no longer monolithic three-tier apps. We're blowing it out into microservices and APIs and automated stuff between six companies that nobody truly understands end-to-end. All of a sudden, you're in a whole different realm on top of the problems that we deferred in the past. And so, I view the problem that we have in front of us as the combination of those two, and Zero Trust is essentially the philosophy we're approaching to architect and structure the solutions.
And it's interesting because it's a lot easier to apply to new applications. So things like that, like the CAF are so helpful. Yep. Because it's a way of thinking about it systemically from the idea and design all the way through to the operational components, including security and governance down the line.
Yep. It's a lot easier to integrate it in, shift left, than it is to deal with it later when nobody remembers it and they're on to six new projects. A lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. It's functionally a tough problem to tackle. I've seen the approach to of using Zero Trust into like an existing organization and existing applications. And it basically defaults to firewall rules because that's basically all you've got. When it's already built, it's already standing, you can't break too much. And so what you're left with is, okay, port, protocol, directionality.
Yeah, the way that we're starting to approach it is kind of bringing in the long neglected identity aspects of security. Because network security is absolutely there. It's absolutely important. We don't want anyone tearing down the firewalls screaming Zero Trust. That's just a dumb idea. What we want to do is blend the two together, right? Because we've got a pretty decent base of it's good to have a perimeter around your network and have a basic, as safe as we can make an internal network. But you want to start thinking like, okay, this cloud stuff, we need native identity-based stuff that is taking all that really rich signal off of identities and devices and doing something with it. And making good security decisions with it, using ML, behavior analytics, blah, blah, blah. But then, the thing that we're finding, I think, is that's really fascinating. We actually included a couple sequences in the cyber reference architecture to kind of explain it. Is how do you go beyond the sort of classic VPN, which is just extending the network to one device at a time? And it's really about projecting and publishing the apps out and then applying that same super strong identity that we have for these cloud native protocols and translating it into the classic stuff like Kerberos and the on-prem WSFed and all that stuff. And so, I really feel like that is where sort of the magic and for vendors, the money is going to come from, like, is really how do we connect all those two things together, bring the identity and network security together so that you can bring the goodness from the future as much as you can to the legacy stuff as you work on refactoring it. And so that's really where I see Zero Trust having a really big impact on the existing stuff. We see some interesting approaches. I mean, Microsoft's got our Azure AD app proxy. There's Zscaler. There's a company called Silverfort that I'm taking a look at that's taking a different architectural approach. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on in that space, but a lot of people are still falling back on their old habits of port protocol and all that. And it's like, that's not app aware. That's not user aware. That doesn't give you the context to make a good access decision.
No.
And it's a yeah, lower you're block. Right. It doesn't give you nuance. It doesn't give you user notification or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it's trying to push the old way, the old infrastructure way, right? The legacy security tech that you and I grew up learning about and implementing into this much more rich world. Because cloud computing is so much more signal rich than the on-prem stuff we have.
By orders of magnitude.
Yeah, and we see so much more. Whether we do anything with it or whether we architect for that is entirely up to us. And as your document points out, it's not going to do that by itself.
I didn't write that, but I really like that section. Most of the CAF secure I had a hand in the authorship of, but I really like the way they did the governance ante patterns. I'm definitely going to be very blunt and direct just like that in the security section when we get to that one.
it really needs to be that way. I think there's still, I can't believe how much, so as a parting thought, I can't believe how much confusion there is around the shared responsibility model still today at the end of 2021. I was just at a conference, now that we started going back to in-person conference a little bit ago, and talking about vulnerability management and both from a tooling technology perspective, but as a concept, and we got into cloud. Somebody asked the question of, wait, isn't that, isn't patching the VMs the cloud provider's responsibility? I went, no, no, it is not.
For PaaS and SaaS, yes. For IaaS, oh no.
Yeah, right. And it was the look of, oh, are you serious? That sort of got me into that, wow.
See,
we're still there. We're still wrestling with that.
I kind of attribute this to the way the human mind works, right? Because everybody's been used to this binary, I do it or it doesn't get done, right? That's the on-prem world. It's like, it's literally my rack all the way from the dirt all the way up. So it's this or thinking. If I don't do it, it doesn't get done. The interesting thing about cloud is the and. I do some and the cloud provider does some. And so the thing you have to learn is not, does it get done or not? You have to learn, okay, where does my stuff end and where does my partner come in? It's almost, in a way, it's like getting married, right? Because when you're single, if nobody cleans the dishes in the sink, if you don't clean the dishes in the sink, nobody does, right?
Nobody does, right.
Your significant other might, or you might. And it's like, you have to actually do that negotiation and figure it out. It's not this black or white thing. It's like this gray area. And that's the thing that like people don't realize. They have to change their mode of thinking is, okay, now I already know what I'm supposed to do. And now I have to work with the cloud provider to figure out how much they do. And that's like a mindset shift. I don't think people are just used to thinking that way.
That's a good point. You know, I haven't quite thought of it that way. But it is a really interesting, interesting way to think about it, because there are things that even though the products and the cloud itself can do on its own, right? You guys are collecting the signals. You guys can do the detections, but somebody still has to do something about it. They have to like be the on the receiving end of the flashing, like like something's going on. They can't be going, oh, I'm sure my cloud will handle that. Like no. Yeah.
I mean, it's not a technical problem anymore. It's actually a whole system problem. You have to understand the system. You can't just be good at one technology and expect you're good. You have to have the big picture or you're not going to succeed. And that's a change, because security people are used to, okay, you do this one thing and then you're fine. That's your job. But we're going from like these super deep pillars of skill into, you need to have like a full T. Like, you need to understand at least how all these other pieces work, because everything's changing with the cloud. You can't just take what you learned in a class 5, 10 years ago, or sometimes 5, 10 days ago,
and apply that in your day job and expect you're done. You actually have to have a sense of the bigger picture, because it's a massive transformation. It's like moving a house. You don't just go sit in the same chair. It's, you have to figure out, is there a chair in the house and where is it? Before you sit in the chair, it's not, you have to change your muscle memory. Anyway, I'll stop with the analogies. I don't have any technical books.
Yeah, I see. Look, I'm an analogy guy too. I like it. I analogies and metaphors are my jam, man. I started there on this show, and I'll let you be the one that tap it off. But interesting, super interesting though. And I found that doc. I've had it bookmarked for forever, and I wanted to talk through it because I think there are so many opportunities where I've talked to folks that have struggled, and I feel like if they had just spent a little bit of time. Now, this doc doesn't necessarily give you the step-by-step play-by-play. It's concept, like you said, right? It's mm-hmm. it's big picture. It's big strategy thinking, like what you should be thinking about rather which button to push. However, if you don't have that frame of mind that sort of transformed into the cloud world, and this is a great place to start. If you don't have that, I think it was Borat that said, you will have a bad time, right? It's not going to be pretty, because you're going to bring in those legacy principles, that old thinking, that infrastructure thinking, that monolithic thinking, and you'll kind of drop it in place, and you know, go, yep, all good. And quickly realize that no.
Yeah. And that's everybody's default. That's the first thing they try, is let me see if what I did will work on this. And then I don't have to learn anything. I don't have to put a lot of brain cycles and cognitive effort and all that stuff into it. And that's a natural, normal human thing. You know, some organizations, cause they have scars in the past and, you know, their leaders have scars, say, hey, let's, you know, I love those customers when I work with them, let's take a step back and let's do this. And I get to save them some pain. But everybody gets around to the same point where they realize they need to change this. It's just, do they learn it the easy way or the hard way?
It's like my kids. Sometimes they listen before they go out and do the thing, and I feel like they get to play for longer with less annoyance. Or sometimes they go, no, we just want to go play. I'm like, okay, you'll be back. And we get to learn it the hard way. But that's life, right? I mean, that's the beauty of it. At least there's a framework for it so that you know, people can do it. Hey, how do people find it? You guys have these shortened URLs for everything.
Yeah.
Does it have one of its own shortened?
Yeah, the CAF one is pretty simple. It's HTTPS ak.ms/CAFSecure. That'll land you on the secure methodology, and then you can, you know, jump in the tree to any of the other pieces. And then the cyber reference architecture is that same ak.ms/MCRA, Microsoft Cybersecurity Reference Architecture. And each of those, there's a Dash Videos version for a YouTube channel with you know, myself and some of our executive advisors kind of walking through the slides on each.
I love it. If I went through my email and searched on that last URL with the videos, there would probably be a few dozen that I sent out that I just get like, how would you recommend I go, hold on, let me send you a URL. Mark does a way better job of explaining this than I can.
Awesome. I
love it. So, all right, folks, I'm going to post those links to the podcast, not that, you know, you all read show notes, please go read the show notes. but the show notes will have the links. Mark just told them to you. They're all over the place. I highly encourage you, if you are in the beautiful blue Azure or however we are supposed to pronounce it, it's a good place to start. If you've already started, it's a good place to mentally reference to see how far off the rails you are. And it's a great resource. So, hey, thanks for maintaining it, Mark, and appreciate you being on the show.
Oh, absolutely. And if anybody has any feedback, you know, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever. I'm always trying to improve it. So really, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah. All right, folks, as always, you can reach out to us on LinkedIn, on Twitter. Mark's findable. Mark, your Twitter handle is?
Mark Simos.
Super complicated. He's so easy to find. All right, This has been another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Hopefully you guys got something out of this. I know I use this quite a bit, so in my daily work life. So hopefully it's referenceable and usable for you too. It's a living document, so remember that it does change. and things get added all the time. I mean that literally. I want to thank Mark for being on the show, Microsoft for getting him here. And folks, we'll catch you another time, another place on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Ciao.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.